Thanks for listening to the Inner Life Podcast. Be sure to join us every weekday at 11 a.m. Central on Relevant Radio or on the Relevant Radio app. Find your local Relevant Radio station at relevantradio.com or stream us live every day on the Relevant Radio app.
It's time to set out on the pathway to healing and light. This is the Inner Life on Relevant Radio. If you have questions or concerns about your faith journey, if you are struggling or searching for something more, if you are in need of some spiritual direction, our Catholic priests are here to help.
One heart at a time.
Welcome to the Inner Life on Relevant Radio.
Welcome indeed to this edition of The Inner Life. It's Tuesday of the second week of Easter. I'm Josh Raymond, and so glad to have you listening. Let me ask, when have you prepared and worked for something, and when you finally got it, when you finally achieved it, whatever you were after, once you got there, were you a little disappointed? At the time when you were working toward that goal, it seemed like it would make life better, or it would make you more fulfilled. It would solve whatever problems that you have. And then you finally reached that goal and you found yourself saying, huh, is that it? I thought there'd be more, or I thought this would be better. For me, as far back as I can remember, I have always loved to run, and running fast, not the long distances, not marathons or cross country or, you know, 5 or 10Ks. I loved running fast, those short, fast sprints. And I wanted to be faster than everybody else. And when I was 6 years old, my family, we moved to a tiny little rural town in northern Idaho, 250 people, very, very small. And we lived on the main street in town that the highway would pass through. And on that the sidewalk that went down the block of our street, that was my racing lane. And when the cars would come through off of the highway and they'd pass down the main street, I would race on foot against all of those cars passing our house to the end of the block. And the posted speed limit was 25 miles an hour. And at 6 years old, of course, you know, naively, I thought that, well, everybody follows the speed limit, right? Everybody's slowing down to exactly 25 miles an hour. I of course know that's not the case now. But looking back, I do wonder how many drivers might have just looked over and rolled their eyes or maybe given a little chuckle to this little kid sprinting down the sidewalk trying to outrun their vehicles. And every once in a while, I'd keep pace with somebody. I'm sure they slowed down just to let me. But out at school on the playground, I would challenge anyone to a race, and I won most of the time. And when I was 9, we ended up moving to one of the larger cities in the state of Idaho. And that meant that I would eventually attend a high school that was in the top athletic division for the state. And I kept running, and I was in track, and I kept winning. I won a lot of races. And in high school, I qualified to go to the state track meet all 4 years. My freshman year, I qualified in one race, the 100-meter dash. And that year, I didn't make it past the preliminary races. Too many older upperclassmen that were out there and just couldn't beat them. But that set me on the path of determination to work and train so that I could win a gold medal at the state track meet. And then my sophomore year, I qualified to go again in two races, the 100 again and also the 200-meter dash. But I was still too young. I still didn't make it out of those preliminary races. The older men, the older boys, they were stronger and faster, and I didn't get to the finals. I wasn't able to get that gold medal yet. So my junior year, throughout the track and field season, it was rare that I actually wouldn't place first in every race that I ran. That year, I qualified in state for state in the maximum number of events that they allowed, four different events. So I went in the 100 and the 200. Just like the year before, but two relays as well, a 4x100 and a 4x400. And I was also favored that year to win the 100-meter dash. But when I ran my very first race at the track meet, at that state track meet, the qualifying heat for the 100-meter dash, about 60 meters in, I pulled my hamstring. And the pulled muscle was severe enough that I could not run anything else for the rest of the 2 days of that track meet. So for the third year in a row, I found myself sitting in the stands watching all of the final races, all the different field events that are taking place, while I'm up there feeling sorry for myself and upset that I wasn't down there on the track getting my gold medal. But that made me even more determined for the final year. After nursing my hamstring over the summer, when track and the season came around that following spring, I was ready, and this was going to be my year. It had to be, right? I was a senior, and so no more chances after this. I had to make this year be the one. Once again, I got to the end of the season, and I had qualified for the state track meet in the same four events as the prior year. And finally, I made it out of the prelims to the finals. Finally got to run in some final races there. And when I got down in the blocks for the 100-meter dash, and the man with the starting pistol shot the gun, and we all took off, I was running down the track as fast as I could, running against seven other sprinters, and we're all closing in on that finish line, and we crossed the finish line. It was so close, I had no idea who won. I knew I was probably up in the top two or three, and I thought somebody else had beaten me. And so we were walking back towards the finish line that we'd already passed, and I was thinking to myself, silver's okay. It's okay. That's fine. It's not the gold, but it's okay. But when we came back to the finish line and there were the line judges there waiting for us, the one in my lane had this big smile. And he said, congratulations. He said, you came in first. I'd finally gotten that gold medal. I finally won. And I was ecstatic. I was over the moon. I was in this state of euphoria. And, you know, it was the best track meet I'd ever had in my life. I'd finally accomplished what I set out to do. I went home the champion of the 100-meter dash. But then over the next days, over the next weeks, it really didn't change anything for me. My life didn't seem to be any better. Unlike I thought would be the case, I didn't have every college in the western half of the U.S. knocking on my door or calling me, offering me full-ride scholarships. The mayor, the governor, the president, none of them stopped by to congratulate me. There was none of that, right? In fact, I actually found myself kind of lacking motivation to train the way that I used to. I didn't have that same goal in front of me. So what was the point of the practice or the training? That determination was gone since the goal was achieved. Now, at the Easter Vigil Mass, we received new members into the church, and those people, the catechumens and the candidates, they had a lot of activity leading up to the Easter Vigil. They were busy with all the different things that they needed to prepare them for entering the church. And it can seem like this is the culmination, this is the goal of all that preparation. You know, it's the end. Well, to a degree, it is a culmination of all the preparation, but it's also the very beginning of entering into a very rich, a very beautiful spiritual journey. There's so much more that's ahead, leading to that ultimate reward of being united with Christ in heaven at the end of this life. And so today we want to discuss how we shouldn't look at entering the church as the end of the process or just the final goal, but rather it's the beginning, and it's just our first step into a new community. So if you're listening and you're a brand new Catholic, let me welcome you into the church and say congratulations, and you have so much ahead of you. And hopefully you'll receive some encouragement this hour on what happens now that you are in full communion with the church. And if you're a lifelong Catholic, you've been in the church for many years, all of your life maybe, we're going to talk about how you can support those people that have just been received into the church. And we're going to do that with the help of one of our regular spiritual directors. Joining us today is Father Joseph Ilo. He's the pastor at Star of the Sea Parish in San Francisco and gives retreats to Mother Teresa's missionaries of charity around the world. Father Ilo, welcome back to The Inner Life. So glad to be able to talk with you again.
Thank you, Josh, and congratulations on that gold medal.
Yeah, it's a lot of years ago, so I don't run that fast anymore. Now, my kids are the ones that I get to watch run. But as I talked about, there is all of that preparation that's leading up for the candidates, the catechumens coming into the church at Easter. There's typically that long run of religious education. They're presented to the bishop of the diocese or the archbishop, depending on the size. There's a lot of learning. There's a lot of activity. And then Easter comes. They're received into the church. They participate in this really amazing and glorious liturgy that is the Easter Vigil Mass. They celebrate afterwards. Maybe there's some cake. You know, they might have had a group of people that they've gone through with. They have kind of that small little community of people. And then afterwards, all that activity kind of ends. And I know I've spoken with other people about this who have come into the church, and they can sometimes feel like there's not much guidance after they're received into the church. So to start out with, what would you recommend if somebody who's just come into the church, what is a good place for them to say, okay, you know, I now have made it into the church, How do I look at this? As I was saying, not at the as the end, but the beginning of this journey.
Right. That's a just a crucial question, because it's not how you begin, it's how you end. And RCIA, as you say, is the beginning. Well, one of the ways that I found to really integrate people, to initiate them, not just on Easter Vigil, but for the rest of their lives into a community, is before the end of the RCIA year to have a class dedicated to the apostolate. What kind of work will you do for God after you're baptized, after you're received? And so we talk very practically about all the different ways that can be done. A lot of them are within the parish, some are outside of the parish. For married people, the most important apostolate, the most basic ministry they do is with their spouses and their children, so raising a family, building a family. But some of the practical ways that we talk about, so speaking of family, if you're married, if you have children, to pray together as a family, to attend Mass as a family, if at all possible. Sometimes it's not with little children, but to pray the rosary together several times a week if you can at home, to read the Bible together, to do apostolic works together as a family, and then as a parish family as well. So there's some of the things that people could get, become more integrated into the community as the best way, I think, is serving the poor. And most parishes have some kind of outreach, like St. Vincent de Paul. We feed the street people in the Skid Row here in San Francisco on Sunday afternoons, bring clothing and blankets to them. And we're also, we have an apostolate in Africa. One of our priests is African. We're helping him build a hospital there. So there are lots of ways that we can help the poor. Also, there are just the basic Bible studies, prayer groups. There's moms groups, Knights of Columbus, men's fellowships, other devotional groups, social events such as potlucks. Also, the parishes that have schools, and if you have your children in a school, get involved in that, in the parent organization, the booster club, or there's catechism programs for children that need a hand from the parents or single people. We have a lot of young adults here in San Francisco, and so we have a pretty strong young adults group, and they, one of them the other day just said, hey, how about a hiking group? Actually, she was a bit older, and she said, well, I'm not a young adult anymore, but I love hiking, so can I start a hiking group? I said, yeah, I'll be your first member. So all those kinds of things within the church, and then outside of the church, to work with other Catholics in building a civilization of love, as John Paul called it. So within the workplace, some guys and gals offer like a Bible study or a prayer group, even within their places of work, if sometimes that's not possible, of course. Or doing social services. One of my parishioners is a firefighter here in San Francisco. He's actually the head of the, he's an African American. He's the head of the Black Firefighters Association. But they do a training, a leadership training for underprivileged kids in the city every summer. And the parish supports that. And so there are many ways within the parish and also within the larger body of Christ. But if I'll just say this one last thing, the foundation of this is that we are called to community. Everybody, by the fact that they're human, is wired for relationship, because we're made in the image of God, who is himself a community of persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So really, we have no identity apart from other people. Other people reflect back to us who we are. And there have been studies, children raised without any human contact are severely autistic. They do not have any self-identity. So it's not just a hobby or a nice thing to do to be involved with other people in prayer and service work. It's essential to our health as a human being. And the parishes are a big part of that. I think just making that point to those who are coming into the church, and also long-term Catholics who maybe are pretty isolated. They come to Mass, maybe, but they don't get involved in anything. To make that point that if we are not in relationship, meaningful relationship with other people, if we are not the body of Christ, we're much less human. We're not going to be healthy and strong and holy people if we're isolated.
Well, you know, and as I was reflecting on this today, a lot of this does come down to that idea of being a community of believers. And that's something that I've heard expressed more within the Catholic Church than I ever did before I became Catholic. As a Protestant evangelical, there's a sense of community, but it's not something that I ever heard emphasized. In your local church, the emphasis was more on your personal relationship with Jesus. As a Catholic, there's definitely that personal relationship that we talk about. We want to foster. We want to develop that. But that emphasis on being part of the community, can you maybe expand on that a little bit more? You know, you talked about how we can see, you know, it reflects back to us. But especially this last year, there hasn't been the same opportunity for that kind of community involvement with COVID, with being, you know, so many communities that have been in a stay-at-home order, you know, lockdown kind of set up in our own cities, our own, you know, metropolitan areas. So how can we, especially right now, live out that idea of community?
Yes, I mean, the biggest problem with the way we've managed the pandemic is isolation. And I think we overreacted, not knowing exactly what the virus was or how it could be managed. But now that we know a lot better, its actual mortality rates and ways of transmission and such, and also safety protocols that work, we have a lot of data now, we can do our best to get back into community life. But even in a lockdown situation, and I know many of those still obtain, so it's just the reality that maybe the church isn't open or you can't visit people. Well, do what you can. So my sister, there's six of us kids, and my dear sister, she's not Catholic. I mean, she left the church. She says she's atheist, so, although she's kind of religious for being an atheist. But she's like the glue of our family. So she's doing these at least quarterly Zoom sessions with all the siblings and the cousins. And she's making connections, community, as much as she can. Now, Zoom is second best, right? It's not real personal contact, but it's something we can do in difficult situations. So be the one. Be the community builder in your family, like my sister is, or in your parish. There are things that, like a Bible study. I remember right after the pandemic, the lockdowns, and we were one of the first cities, San Francisco, to go like total lockdown. And we were all thrown off our balance. And for about 2 months, really, we just didn't know what to do. But it just occurred to me, hey, we haven't had an RCI meeting for 6 weeks, 2 months. And I just said, okay, it's time to get going here. Let's do it on Zoom. And the coordinator, she goes, yeah, you're right. I mean, I got to do something, but I'm kind of paralyzed. So we broke through the paralysis. We got going with the meetings again on Zoom. And it really made the best of a difficult situation. So I think believe that it's necessary to be in community and in relationship with others, and then you'll find a way.
We're talking with Father Joseph Ilo, priest in the Archdiocese of San Francisco. And we're looking at how we can foster that community in our parishes, and especially with new people that have been received into the church here at the Easter Vigil. What have you done at your parish to help develop that atmosphere of community? What are some ways that you've been able to make your parish a more welcoming place? And if you're a convert, what helped you to stay engaged in moving forward on your spiritual journey during that first year or two after entering the church? You can give us a call here on our studio line, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You can also email us, innerlife@relevantradio.com. And we've got more coming up right after this here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.